We live at a time when it would seem that the supply of good manners is at an all-time low. Our popular culture, our politics, have become increasingly coarse and bitter and argumentative and just plain rude. Raising some questions. Is it that we are just too busy to be polite? Is it that we're too lazy? Or have we simply stopped caring about the feelings of other people? This morning in this hour of the show, we'll be talking about the need for civility in society, and our guest is P.M. Forney. He is professor of Italian literature and also co-founder of the Civility Project at Johns Hopkins University. We'll talk about civility, something that he says is not just important for its own sake. One of the arguments that he makes is in reducing the level of incivility in society, we can also lower the level of violence. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest, P.M. Forney. He is an award-winning professor at Johns Hopkins University, where he has taught for the past 20 years. In 1997, he co-founded the Johns Hopkins Civility Project. The idea here was to assess the significance of civility, manners, and politeness in contemporary society. He's also co-director of Reassessing Civility, Forms and Values at the End of the Century. That was an international symposium that took place at Hopkins in March of 1998. And as I mentioned, he now directs the Civility Initiative at Johns Hopkins. He is the author of two books that deal with this subject. His books include Choosing Civility, the 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct, and more recently, The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. That book has just come out in paperback, so if you're interested, you can seek those books out at the bookstore. And here on the program, we welcome comments and questions from listeners. We just ask people to be brief, so brief in their comments, so we can get in as many as possible, and to try and stay on the topic that we have staked out. But other than that, questions are welcome. Questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. At any point here, questions are certainly welcome. Professor Forney, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am good. Thank you very much. And yourself?
I'm very well, thank you.
We appreciate you giving us some of your time.
I'm delighted to be here.
You know, I in my introduction, I did use the term manners, and I'm sure that there are people who would argue that manners are important, but that perhaps they are the outer manifestation of something that is deeper, and that probably we should say that there is more to civility than etiquette. When you talk about civility, what is it that you think at the deepest level you're really talking about?
When we talk about civility, we talk about a benevolent awareness of others. We are civil when we are aware of others, when we deploy our power of attention, when we are very, very attuned to other people's feelings. We are civil when we are aware of others and we weave restraint, respect, and consideration into the very fabric of that awareness. And it is like love. You cannot have love, you cannot love someone without paying attention to them. And the same is true with civility. It's a form of benevolent attention.
Mm. I'm sure that there are people who would argue that now, at least over the past few years, we have seen a serious decline in civility and that this is something that is getting worse all the time. Now, at the same time, I would be fairly certain we could probably go back and we could find comments by men of letters of the ancient world who would essentially say the same thing. Do you, in fact, think that this problem here, the increase in incivility, do you think that it is actually getting worse?
The decline of civility in this country, like in many countries of the industrialized western part of the world, is true. It is real. There are certain established traditional forms of deference and respect that are becoming obsolete. However, when we notice this decline, when we notice this half-empty glass, we do not notice that the glass is also half full. Let me give you an example. Let's suppose that there are fewer youngsters today who give their seats on a bus to a pregnant woman. Let's suppose that that is true. I would argue that that is a sign of a decline in civility. But when that woman steps into her workplace today, the number of men who take her seriously as an intellectual peer and a professional peer is much higher than in my father's generation. And that, I would say, is a gain in civility. Today we are more respectful of the people who do not look like us. Maybe they have a different skin color. We have an ecological consciousness, an environmental concern for our planet, all things that are recent arrivals on the scene. And so are we ruder than in times gone by? Yes, we are. Are we more civil than in times gone by? Yes, we are. It depends what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. I think that's interesting that we should be making some progress when it comes to the way that we relate to people that we are close to. I mean, in the sense that these are the people that we see and live with every day. And it seems that a lot of the rudeness has to do with interactions between strangers, as if we are saying, well, this person, I don't know this person, and I may never see this person again, so there's no need for me to treat them with any kind of particular respect because they mean nothing to me.
That's true, and it is very true that also we are much less concerned about social approval than we were in previous generations. We simply care less than we used to about what other people think of us. And in part, this has to do with the anonymity in our lives. When we do not know the people around us, we have less incentive to be considerate and kind to them than when we know them. And in part, the internet is making us disposable and replaceable. I don't need you. I have the net is an unspoken and often subconscious attitude of our days. People are becoming disposable in our offline life because there are so many of them we can turn to online. And so we are more likely to be critical, abrasive, and hostile because we have always recourse to that mill of pseudo-relationships that is the net.
Do you, I don't know if this is oversimplifying, but do you think that at the root, some of this loss of civility has to do with selfishness?
Selfishness and that particular kind of selfishness that we call self-restraint. As a society, we have been very good at teaching self-esteem to our children in the last couple of generations. We have been very good, very successful, maybe too successful. We have not been as successful, however, in instilling in our children self-restraint, and we cannot have a social society without self-restraint. Now, self-esteem is a good thing in good measure. It's a sort of immune system for the soul. It keeps us sane. But when we feed our children oversized portions of self-esteem, we create children who are self-absorbed, who believe that the world revolves around them, and for whom, therefore, it's very difficult to be considerate and kind and giving. They are essentially trapped in a cage of narcissism that we have built for them. So I agree totally with you. Self-absorption, selfishness are part of the picture.
I guess I find myself going back to the idea, in as much as you've said, and I think it's certainly true, that in many respects, when it comes to respect and respecting people who are different from us, that we've actually made some progress.
Absolutely, and that's part of the increase in civility.
But at the same time, I also wonder if part of the issue here is that civility isn't something that we seem to reward much. And that is, you know, when you look at people that are admired or maybe people who have influence, do we have good models for civility? Is that something that we would point to someone, and if they behave that way, we would point to them and say, now I would like to be like this person. I'm not sure that we do that.
Well, that you're pointing out a real problem. The kind of role models that we see on television, in the media in general, on the net, are very often abrasive, self-centered, and those are certainly not the best models for civility, to make civility cool. I'm always saying that when we will make this progress, that we will be able to make civility cool, then we will have won the battle. And so one of the reasons that I started to talk across the country about civility is exactly this, to detrivialize the issue of civility and good manners, and showing, among other things, that they are not just things that we do for others, but things that we do for ourselves. When we are civil, we are liked, we are likable, and people want to be with us. The world is the oyster of the likable, and we need to be in the company of others, part of circles of acquaintance and respect, in order to thrive in life. But in order to have social support that is so important to thrive, isolation, after all, is a predictor of early illness and early death in the second part of our lives. We need social support. We need to be a part of circles of acquaintance and care. But in order to gain and maintain social support, we need to be able to have to deploy social skills. We need, in other words, to behave with others in ways that make our presence preferable to our absence in the circles in which we move. Civility, good manners, and politeness are time-proven, very effective codes of relational skills.
We have a caller. Let me just very quickly introduce again our guest, P.M. Forney. He's an award-winning professor at Johns Hopkins University, where he has taught for the past 20 years. Italian literature is his specialty. He is also the co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project, and he has written two books about civility. Those books are Choosing Civility and The Civility Solution. They both were published in hardcover by St. Martin's Press, and I believe that Civility Solution, that's the most recent, and it is just out in paperback. So you may seek the books out. And also here, your questions, comments are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller in Urbana here where we are, and we'll go right there, line one. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
I've been trying to think how to frame this question, so I might have to babble a bit to try to, in a roundabout way, get to it. It seemed to me that our culture seems to have started to become crude and coarse sometime in the early 60s. Of course, that's based on my life experience. I'm 56. But I do recall it when I was younger, there was a cultural expectation of a certain level of behavior that isn't seen anymore. As an example, you know, I can remember going to a professional baseball game with my father, and we went there in coat and tie, whereas nowadays you barely get people in there that have washed. You know, I'm exaggerating, but you follow my meaning. It's just the general. There's been a general decline in public expectation of how to behave in public, in my opinion. And there's also at the same time been an expectation of crudeness that seems to have no resistance, and that, you know, as an example, the people who have these automobiles with enormously overpowered stereo systems, you can hear coming blocks and blocks away, or noisy motorcycles and things like that, things that just deliberately these people are deliberately disturbing the peace of the neighborhood and the environment for no reason that I can see other than just to be obnoxious. And it seems to be a culturally accepted fact. Nothing is done about it. The police do nothing about it, obviously, and so forth. And I'm wondering, how do you think my question is, how do you think just the general coarsening of and crudity of our society is plays out in this, and the lack of manners is really a bigger reflection of the fact that we've just become more slovenly as a nation and as a people than we used to be.
I think I think that you are right, that there was an acceleration of the decline of civility following the 1960s, the counterculture. And there was a suspicious attitude towards civility and good manners that were believed to be hypocritical, elitist, and even discriminating back then. And informality, of course, became the cry of the day. And informality is not tantamount to incivility, but it is at its extreme forms, in its extreme forms, it borders with incivility. And we are known to cross the line. If you are invited to the White House and show up in flip-flops, are you informal or uncivil? Well, probably both. Extremely informality it does not predispose us to be tactful and thoughtful. And so, yes, we have to go back 40 years ago or so to notice a sea change. The society became more informal. People started to care less about the social approval of their actions. And the general coarsening of America was accelerated by the media, certainly, and even more so and more radically in recent years. So the decline in civility reflects the history of a country always, and the important sea changes that take place leave a trace in how we treat one another in everyday life. And this is exactly why civility and good manners are not trivial, because they are not really about which fork to choose for the salad. They are about how we treat one another in everyday life, and what's more important than that.
Mm. All right, let's talk with someone in Chicago, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Well, I'm a little more concerned about civility in essence than civility in outward behavior. I think a society that doesn't insure 20 or 30% of its people and doesn't provide good employment for them is a pretty uncivil society. And I certainly don't like, you know, these kids driving around being aggressive with their radios and people, I'd like it if people treated each other more politely, but I don't think that you can separate the surface appearances from the essence of a society. And I think what you're really seeing is a lot of people feel society doesn't care about them. Why should they care about society? And I think people should be more concerned about the essence of what's going on here than the outward appearances.
I don't think that we have to choose, that we are obliged to choose. I think that we, in a civil society, we are entitled to expect both. We are entitled to expect the social justice, and we are entitled to expect that people will treat us in a human way. And it's not just a matter of surface. When you treat me in a polite and considerate way, you show me respect. And that's not surface, that's not circumstance, is essence. And so do we need to ensure that our society observes the most elementary rules of social justice? Of course we have to fight for that. Of course we have to underscore the importance of that. Should we endorse the importance of good manners and civility in the way we act towards one another? Good manners and civility that, among others, lower the level of stress in our lives and therefore have a positive consequence on our health, on our well-being. Of course we should strive for that. I don't think we should choose. I think that in everyday life, one of the main reasons that civility and politeness are not trivial is that they do the everyday busy work of goodness. And the connection between civility and ethics. We are ethical agents in everyday life when we respect the rules of civility and manners, when we let someone merge into the flow of traffic, when we don't refrain from taking somebody else's spot in the parking lot, when we give credit where credit is due, when we refrain from taking someone else's food in the office refrigerator, when we welcome a new coworker in our working environment. When we do all these things that have to do with good manners and civility, these are not superficial things. These are very important things that have to do with quality of life. And if you want to be a decent person, you better give some good attention to these things. Mm.
So the argument that you're making is a civil society is also a society that values justice, and in fact, you go on to make the argument that a civil society is also a more peaceful society.
Absolutely, there are. Let me give you an example. In any given year, in the American workplace, there are about 1.8 million acts of physical violence, from a worker shoving a coworker to a worker shooting a coworker. 1.8 million. How do we know that? Because they are reported, which probably means that they are underreported and they are probably more around 2 million. Now, if we go from acts of physical violence to acts of incivility, to acts of rudeness, to acts of disrespect, how many do you think there are? Well, probably billions. The fact is we don't know. Why don't we know? Because they are not reported. What we do know, however, is that many of those acts of physical violence for which we do have a figure have their origin in an act of disrespect, in an act of rudeness that spirals out of control. One of the great incentives that we should have as a society to promote manners and civility is that when we keep the levels of incivility down, we keep down as well the levels of physical violence. Because physical violence is often the result of escalating incivility. One person slights another person. What happens, for instance, in traffic? A slight, someone shows a little bit of show of finger puppetry to the other driver. The other driver responds in kind. And there you have the beginning of what can become a tragic event of the kind that happens all over the world every day, but it's part because the two people are stressed and because they are in an anonymous environment. So by eliminating, by reducing the numbers of slides, thanks to good manners and civility, we make our environment safer from the point of view of physical attacks.
We have another caller, someone in Champaign. Let's talk with them. Line one. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
I'm interested in your thoughts on political correctness, those who advocate it and those who rail against it.
Well, I think I don't like it very much. Of course, political correctness has become almost a caricature in the way it is represented, and I think that sometimes we have gone such a distance in ensure political correctness that the caricature is well deserved. I think that people should be treated equally. I think that that is the way of ensuring social justice and peace. I do not agree and I'm not comfortable with the length that in recent years we have gone to obey what we thought were the ideals of political correctness.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, other questions are certainly welcome. We're at our midpoint here, talking with P.M. Forney from Johns Hopkins University. He's been on the faculty there for the past 20 years. He's a specialist in Italian literature. He's also the co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project and has authored two books, The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude, and Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. They're both published in hardcover by St. Martin's Press, and the newest one, the most recent, is The Civility Solution, which is now just out in paperback. Questions, comments, welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I'm interested in having you perhaps just talk a little bit about how it is that you came to take on this problem and then go on to be the co-founder of the Civility Project at Johns Hopkins.
For about the first 10 years of my academic life, I was a straight literary scholar that wrote on medieval Italian literature, academic books that all of 12 people read around the world. And that was fine. That was my identity. I was a professor at a major university. But at a certain point, something changed in my life in the mid-1990s. And that was not enough. I discovered that I needed to concern myself together with Italian literature of the Middle Ages with something that had a more direct relevance with everyday life. It was probably my Middle Age crisis, the Middle Age crisis of a professor of the Middle Ages. And Middle Age crises take many forms. Some people will try to yearn, they will yearn for a sports car, a red Ferrari, or a trophy wife, a new mate, a trophy wife, or a trophy husband, although I'm not sure that the latter exists. My Middle Age crisis took the direction of falling in love with this form of gracious goodness that we can call civility. I had a sense that it was a much underutilized resource for society, and I decided to spend the next 10 years of my life trying to put the notion of civility on the national agenda for discussion. And I started I co-founded the Johns Hopkins Civility Project. I started to write on the topic. I started to make partnerships with other entities that were promoting civility. And I never looked back. And all this followed a sort of epiphany that happened to me one day at the very beginning of this journey. I was teaching my Dante course, Dante's Divine Comedy, to my undergraduates at Johns Hopkins one day in the mid-1990s, and I looked at my students, and a thought occurred to me that had not occurred to me before. It was an odd thought, but it stayed with me, and it changed my life. And the thought was, these are my students, and I want them to know everything that there is to know about Dante and Italian literature. But even if they did, and they went out to be unkind to a little old lady on a bus, I would think that I had failed as a teacher. It was an odd thought, as I say, but it stayed with me. I think that after having dedicated my life to the universe of aesthetics, ethics was knocking at my door. And I thought, maybe this happens to everybody. In the first part of our lives, we pursue beauty, and in the second part of our lives, we pursue goodness. And my interest in goodness took the quest for civility and the advocacy of civility in the family, in the workplace, in the schools, and indeed of good manners in particularly. Especially with children, because when we teach children good manners, we give them the training wheels of altruism, and there is no substitute for that.
We have some other callers. We will bring them into the conversation now, starting with someone in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm very upset about the lack of civility in our political realm, and my concern is that in other eras where political discourse has been so nasty. I think back to the administration of President John F. Kennedy and how the right-wing irrational discourse, the vitriol, the invectives, so probably in some degree played into the egregious and horrific act of violence committed against the President of the United States. And I have more than a passing interest in President Barack Obama, because, one, I'm African-American. He's the first African-American president. But the vitriol, the invective, the downright low-down behavior I see exhibited by the right wing and sort of what condoned by the Republican leadership, you know, calling a Nazi, Hitler, equating the health reform bill to the Holocaust recently, Joe Wilson in a joint session of Congress saying you lie, Michelle Bachmann holding her 9/12, and on and on and on. And I figure this is going to create an atmosphere that engenders violence, and I'm afraid for the president and the first lady, and I'd like for you to comment on about my misgivings and my concerns. Thank you.
I think that your misgivings and your concerns are certainly legitimate, and I think that both political ends of the spectrum are culpable of some of what you deplore. What concerns me is that when the political social group, our politicians, misbehave, this alienates and disenfranchises our youngsters. They become jaded. They are alienated from the political process, and it's very difficult for them to engage as active and productive members of civil society. They retreat in a cocoon of surliness and disenfranchisement and critical of the world of the adults and of all figures of authority. It has a very bad consequence on society. And so, I think that we should be very concerned about the quality of our political discourse and what is being broadcast on the radio, of what is on the way that we respond to the people who are not on the political, on our political, attuned to our own political ideas. And can violence ensue? Yes, we know that that violence can ensue, and we go back to the notion that rudeness or insensitivity can escalate, can spiral into violence. So I agree that this is a serious matter.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Urbana next, line number two. Hello.
Hi. My question is somewhat related to the last caller, but I wanted to, you know, sort of narrow it down to the daily life as opposed to the large political arena. I'm concerned because here in this country, when, you know, we talk about freedom of speech and freedom of expression, so that, you know, whenever someone uses a, you know, expresses their anger at another racial group or someone of a different sexual preference, then, you know, the retort is, well, I have a right to say what I want to. So I'm just curious about to what extent you've investigated this, what I see as a very thin line between American respect for freedom of expression and the kind of rudeness and insults that you've been talking about so far.
Well, somebody said once, your right to swing your arm ends at my nose. Although I don't think that we should legislate civility, I think that civility is a form of obedience to the unenforceable. If we teach civility to our children, if we raise them in an atmosphere that is conducive for them to be respectful of others, we create a new generation that will at the same time express freely its opinions and being able to, at the same time, to restrain the least appealing traits of our nature. But we are not training our children. Let me give you an example. When Mama used to teach little Timmy, you really know that you should chew with your mouth closed. But why, Mama? Why should I do that? Well, let me tell you, little Timmy, it just appears that human beings don't seem to enjoy looking at half-chewed food in the mouth of others, or words to that effect. What has Mother done? Well, she has certainly conveyed a rule of table manners, but she has done much more than that. She has conveyed the basic principle upon which ethical behavior is based, the notion that our actions have consequences for others, and that we should care about that. She is conveying to little Timmy the notion that whether he eats or chews with his mouth closed or open is something that he has to care about because it has consequences for others. Now, little Timmy will not understand immediately, but Mama will repeat it again and again, and one day he will understand. This is the kind of training that we have to give to our children in order to make them aware that other people bruise as easily as we do, that other people's claim to contentment and happiness is as valid as our own. When we create this kind of person, we are not worried about trying to curb the freedom of speech, because they will be at the same time very vocal about their rights, but also very respectful of the rights of others.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
You know, I'm glad that the caller raised the question, because I also found myself thinking about all of this, whether one issue here is that we have placed too much value on honesty, in the sense of saying it is always best to say what you think, to be honest with other people, to be straightforward, and I think one actually could make the argument that, no, it's not always best to say what you think.
No, that's true. And we have identified being able to express ourselves, express self-expression, with letting it all hang out. While restraining yourself, it's also a way of expressing yourself. You're expressing yourself with restraint. It's just a different way, and so we have to rediscover. Do you express yourself by engaging in unprotected sex as a teenager? Let's suppose that the answer is yes, but you are also expressing yourself by deciding not to engage in unprotected sex as a teenager, and wait to have sexual relationships until much later in life. If it is self-expression, the former behavior, we must accept that is self-expression, the latter. And how do you self-express in the latter? Well, by being considerate of yourself and others, by being smart, by making a smart decision, and by finding the fortitude of resisting the temptation of going the easier way. So we have to rediscover that very often in life it is the path of greater resistance that is the one that pays handsome dividends. Mm.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 PM Forning teaches at Johns Hopkins University's professor of Italian literature there. He's also co-founder of the Johns Hopkins Civility Project and has, in the last 10 years or so, been doing a lot of speaking on this very subject, writing as well. He's the author of two books you might want to look at, Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct, and also The Civility Solution, What to Do When People Are Rude. They're both published by the St. Martin's Press, and The Civility Solution has just now come out in paperback. Questions are welcome. We have about 10 minutes left, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Champaign County is up next here, line one. Hello?
Hi. I thought about being rude and changing the subject, but and asking you about the early Sufi poet's influence on Dante's Inferno, but I guess I won't, though I already have, I guess. I kind of associate my remarks from the first caller from Chicago, who said that, you know, I think we have a little more focus on being civil in an uncivil, unjust world, you did mention social justice and all, but, you know, there are times when being rude is probably appropriate, and one has to be discerning about when that is and when that isn't, but I think that there's a case to be made for that. But the earlier remark you made about political correctness, I'm a little curious about how you came down on that side. In this community, if you oppose an icon of the chief, a Hollywood caricature of an Indian chief dancing at the halftime, you're called politically incorrect. But actually, it's just extremely culturally insensitive and beyond rude. And we have a political system that says that Washington, D.C.'s football team can be called the Redskins because nobody challenged the trademark in a timely fashion. So I just had to blurt that out, and I guess I'll just be dismissed as rude or something. Thank you.
You're welcome. I think that when it comes to political correctness, we all have different notions of what is offensive and what is not. And I think that's part of the problem. I think that there are many people who honestly don't see anything incorrect or anything offensive in certain behaviors or even certain denominations of teams. I frankly don't see. I mean, it's a very thorny topic, and when we delve in it, the more we delve in it, and the more we radicalize our opinions, and the more it's difficult to come to an agreement. I think that common sense should prevail, and we should focus on. It is a little bit. Let me give you an example. Diversity. Diversity is something that is very important. I think it's something that has to be respected, and even leveraged whenever it's possible. We live in the most, probably the most diverse, the American workplace is the most diverse workplace in the world. But we also have to acknowledge that very often diversity is such at a very superficial level. And when we look very closely, we are not that diverse. For instance, as a man, if I enter a church, I have to uncover my head. If I enter a synagogue, I have to cover my head. There you have diversity at play. There are two rules of behavior that are at odds with one another, but only at a very superficial level, because the two rules essentially fall under the same principle. In a house of worship, you pay respect. You pay them in one way in the church and another way in the synagogue, but really the spirit of the ritual is the same, and so it's really up to us if we want to focus on the things that divide us, or if we want to try to transcend them in the name of the common humanity, and so that I think is. Well, I'm partial to the latter solution, let's put it that way.
We have maybe about 5 minutes left. If someone wants to call very quickly, we'll try to get them in, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. One thing that I was interested to note that I think for some time now at Johns Hopkins, have taught a course on Italian manners. And in this course, students read a book of manners from every major period of Italian history. And I think the idea here is that if you look at what people have to say about manners, well, that tells you something about their society.
Yes, the society at large and its mores and its beliefs is reflected in the books of conduct.
And I was also, I was moved to go on my computer to Amazon, and I just put in the word manners to see how many things would come up, and I got something over 790,000 titles. So clearly, people are writing and publishing, and one presumes buying guides to manners, because people are looking for some advice on
right.
the way to behave. And one wonders how it is at the same time we could have a society that was that consumed with what is the right thing to do, so that we have all these books offering advice, and yet on the other hand we should have the kind of problem that everyone seems to feel that we have, is that in spite of all of these thousands of books about manners, we can't quite seem to get ourselves right with this.
Well, I think that we have to look at the half-filled glass.
Mm.
Part of what those thousands of titles accomplish is to make sure that the glass is half-filled. And what happens in everyday life, the media will focus on the emptiness, the empty part of the glass. But when we do that, we forget that there are forces in the family, in religious congregations, in the schools, that every day work in the direction of keeping that glass half full. And it doesn't make the news. It doesn't get the big titles, the big stories in the newspapers. But it is the daily grind of goodness that keeps the world on the precipice and makes it. Sure that it doesn't go overboard.
We have a couple of callers here. We'll try to get them in, both of them. First line one in Urbana. Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
I'd like to first say that I really appreciate this conversation. It's something that's really necessary in society today. And I appreciate what you've been saying about we need civility, and we've lost it, and especially in the United States. It seems that, don't you think that the reason why that is because people have become self-centered and selfish, and we have a selfish kind of attitude trickling from the top on the way down, that our rights, our opinions, our beliefs, our way of life is, or the way I feel, is more important than the other person. Even in the family situation, it has happened. So therefore, it makes you more uncivil toward the other person, not caring about what you say. Don't you think that might have something to do with the selfishness that prevails?
Well, there is a dangerous mixture of narcissism and low self-esteem that characterizes many youngsters today, and youngsters who, of course, become adults, and they are us. They are conflicted. On the one hand, they have been told a thousand times how wonderful and unique they are, warts and all. On the other, not being stupid, they sort of see through that well-intended by destructive ruse. And so they do not know what they are, and people who do not know who they are not easy to be with. And so they are trapped in a cage of narcissism that we have built for them. So call it narcissism, call it self-absorption, call it looking out for number one, you are right. It's exactly what you are pointing out to, and it's the sense that the unwillingness to transcend our own immediate needs and desires to tend to the needs and desires of others. But the fact remains that whether we like it or not, whether we realize it or not, we are all the trustees of one another's contentment and happiness and well-being.
I agree.
And that's our destiny in life, because life is a relational experience. Our lives are about connecting and relating. We are creatures of the social ocean.
Mm.
And we are hardwired for connecting and cooperating.
Right.
And because life is relational, we need to learn relational skills.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. One real quick here, Urbana, line two. Go ahead.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
I wanted to also express my appreciation for the fact that this project on civility exists. And then I wanted to say that there isn't at least one national organization that I know of that focuses on nonviolent communication founded by Marshall Rosenfield, who happens to be a psychiatrist, but its attempt is, or its mission is, to teach nonviolent communication in the context of self-respect and respect for others, and communicating in a way that observes rather the basic needs of both parties. That is, we all need to feel respected, we need to feel safe, and so on. And anyway, I just wanted to say you may know about this.
Yes, I'm aware of its existence, and I commend it very much. And it really is a philosophy of communication that is perfectly attuned to what we at the Civility Initiative at Johns Hopkins believe very strongly, that if we teach our children to communicate with respect, there is going to be an increase in quality of life, a decrease in stress, and a decrease in violence. And so very much is at stake. Our future is at stake when we talk about the future of civility and good manners.
There we must stop, because we have come to the end of the time. Our guest, P.M. Forney, is professor of Italian literature at Johns Hopkins University, where he also directs the Civility Initiative, author of the books Choosing Civility and The Civility Solution. Professor Forney, thank you very much.
Thank you, David. It was a great pleasure being with you.